Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the Political Cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show tonight, everybody. The Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Saturday evening, April 13th, and we're coming to you from our flagship radio station in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM/FM affiliates of the Liberty News Radio Network, and of course, simulcasting online to our legion of worldwide listeners at thepoliticalcesspool.org, libertynewsradio.com, libertyroundtable.com. Been an easy night of work for me this evening. I tell you, I had to contribute a little bit during the first hour. Keith Alexander just carried the show on his back during the second, and what an informative and fresh take on an old topic that he delivered. What a great look! That's why Keith's here. I mean, that's why he's here every week. He's the best. And tonight, to round things up, I will slack equally as Winston Smith puts the show on his robust shoulders, and Winston has a guest this evening, a noted author that we're excited to host for the first time. We're going to find out about his new book, Jack's War. Winston, why don't you introduce the featured guest of the evening here?
Hi, James. Thank you very much. My friend, it's always my pleasure to get to interview authors, and I've had the pleasure and the privilege of interviewing quite a few on this program. One thing you can say about us at Political Cesspool, we are readers. And I know I've met many of our listeners, and people who listen to this show are readers. They are serious readers. They like to read. I keep informed. Well, tonight, to add to our stable of authors that have appeared on our show, we welcome Mr. C.C. Conrad. And Mr. Conrad is the author of a book titled Jack's War Through the Gates of Hell. It's a very tough book, and we're going to get into that during the course of the interview. But for now, I just want to say hello to Mr. Conrad, and welcome to the show, sir.
Hello, Winston. How are you?
I am very well, and I'm very happy to get to talk to you. This is a real pleasure. I hope you've been anticipating this day.
Oh, yes. I've been working on this all day, and I'd like to thank you and Keith and James and all of the folks there for giving me the opportunity to be on the show and talk about my little book.
Entirely our pleasure, Mr. Conrad, and happy to have you.
Thank you.
All right. If you don't mind, sir, I'm just going to call you Mr. Conrad because, you are of the, how do I say this delicately, but you are of the status, shall I say, that you deserve.
Oh.
That's small sign of respect.
Oh, well, really and truthfully, you can call me anything you like as long as it's not late for dinner. You know the story.
Yeah. All right. Well, to start off, let's have you give us a synopsis of the book. Take as much time as you need. We have 45 minutes. So just tell us what the book is about, basically.
Okay. All righty. Well, the main character of the book is Jack Core, of course. He's a rather normal, everyday fellow, just like anybody else, and just like so many other white people of this age. He's pretty much unaware of all the racial things that are going on around him and in our communities. Likewise, he is completely unaware of the nature of the effect that the anti-white propaganda has had on him and his mind, his way of thinking, we might say. At one point in the story, Jack meets a rather special girl by the name of Libby Springfield. And eventually, of course, the two fall very much in love and plan to get married. Well, shortly before the wedding, Jack and Libby are carjacked by a group of black thugs, criminals, drug peddlers, whatever you like to call them. And during that night, Libby is rather brutally killed, and Jack, of course, just barely survives. After a rather lengthy series of trials and court hearings and whatnot of these folks, some of the criminals are jailed, some are freed, some get some heavy sentences, and, of course, some get pretty easy sentences. Jack, of course, since he went through all this, feels that this is just not right and decides to take matters into his own hands. One thing that, of course, continually haunts Jack through this whole story is the question in his mind of why he hesitated. Jack is not a... a gullible sort of fellow, when he was driving down this road where the blacks were standing along the side of the road, he saw that this was not a good situation. It was not a good place for him or Libby to be, but he still stops the car and hesitates, and that's when they get the drop on him. Of course, this hesitation worries him through the whole book. So as things proceed, he hears, after the trials and all this thing, certain pro-white individuals speak at a rally at his in his hometown, nearby where he can hear it. And as he listens to these speakers, he likes some of them. He doesn't like some. Some don't look too good. But eventually someone speaks, makes part of a speech, and he hears things that helps him to understand that there's a reason that he hesitated. It was, of course, a lifetime of leftist propaganda. This, of course, leads him to a very great change in his outlook on life. Well, as the story proceeds, he takes his vengeance on the criminals one at a time. He hunts them down and kills them and all that business. And at the same time, he begins his journey into a world of what we might call pro-white knowledge by visiting different, pro-white websites and buying books. And eventually, he's invited to go to a pro-white conference, much like the one that we just had up there in Tennessee. There are a few special features in the book. Jack and Libby are not just simply two ordinary people. These two characters in the book are allegorical as well as pointing at some of the things that actually happen in our society. You see, Jack represents our race as it is now, but Libby is a rather special person, very much beyond what we can measure in normal terms, because she represents our race as it could be or perhaps should be in the future. Libby is the what we might call the best of the evolutionary process, and therefore she outshines everyone else around her. She's prettier and healthier and nicer and all that sort of thing. Jack represents our race as it is now, and Libby, of course, represents the future. But Jack's hesitation very much points up what will happen to our race if we, as a people right now, continue to hesitate. That is to say, we won't have a future if we continue to hesitate. Now, there are a couple of other little features in the book. Some of the names of the characters also have certain little bits of meaning. And if the reader decides, for whatever reason, to search some of these names out, like the names of the characters, or the like the names of the judges I give who defend these black criminals, they'll actually get a little more depth in the story. I hope, of course, to draw. Go ahead.
Oh, I was. If you don't mind, I'll just go ahead and ask you. You're just talking about some of the people in the story, and the first thing that struck me about the story was that I'd have to go very far into it before I saw that you allude to many things that have happened in real life, many real-life events. For example, the ordeal of Jack and Libby, it closely resembles that of Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom.
Winston, hold up right there, my friend, and our guest, Mr. Conrad. We are going to take a commercial break, and we'll be back with more of this interview when we return on the Political Cesspool Radio program.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0° sleeping bag. This comfortable family-sized sleeping bag can hold two adults and one child or four young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Extra Large Cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Since disaster can strike at any time, you always need to be prepared. And not just with an insurance policy. Superstorm Sandy left thousands of people starving and stranded for weeks. You need to be prepared with an emergency supply of food. Now through April 30th, save up to 25% on freeze-dried food during the Freeze-Dry Guy Mix and Match number 10 can sale. Freeze-dried food packed in heavy-duty double-enameled number 10 cans. With over 99% of the oxygen removed, it has the longest shelf life of any food available. Over 25 years. Choose from entrees, meats, vegetables, fruits, and desserts. All made in the USA. Just add hot water, wait 10 minutes, and serve. And the taste, absolutely delicious. Free shipping to 48 states. Now through April 30th, save up to 25%. Visit freezedryguy.com. freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. 866-404-3663. Act today. Don't miss out.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. James Edwards, Winston Smith, and our featured guest for the evening, CeCe Conrad, author of Jack's War. And we're going to give you information about how you can own the title a little bit later on in the program tonight. But as Mr. Conrad was going through the initial premise of his book during that opening segment, I couldn't help but draw the connection to the real-life murders and rapes of Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom, who Winston was making mention of right before that last commercial break began. And, of course, I had the rare opportunity to appear on CNN and talk about that horrific ordeal that took place in Knoxville. So what is written about fictionally in this book is something that occurs, it's very real and occurs far too often in society. It's an issue, as Winston said, a hard issue that should be talked about. And I offer this up because I know that on any given broadcast that we have, our opponents are listening, and it goes without saying, and it shouldn't have to be mentioned, but of course, this is a book of fiction. And the characters in books of fiction do things that we would not do in real life, which is go out and seek revenge. And so for those listening to the SPLC, from the SPLC tonight, we're of course not advocating violence. But I am very interested to learn more. And Winston, you were getting into that right before we had to take a pause.
Yes, thank you, James. Mr. Conrad, as I was saying before we went to the break, you frequently allude to real-life events, and I mentioned the Shannon Christian, Christopher Newsom murder. You also referred to the Wichita Massacre, in which a couple of feral Obama supporters, shall we say, kidnapped a group of four or five young white people and forced them to carry out a very lewd acts on each other, and then they took them out to a snow-covered football field, I think it was, and shot them. And one woman in the group survived to tell a story. You also allude to the Zebra murders. I remember those. I remember hearing about those back in the 60s. You refer to Khalid Muhammad's speech, in which he tells his audience that all white people should be killed, and then once we're buried, they should dig us up again and kill us again because we didn't die hard enough the first time. You talk about Kamal Kamban, who talks about, is a professor at a North Carolina college, and he talks about exterminating white people from the face of the earth. You also refer heavily to Alan Eckert's book. Now, why did you use so many real life events in your story?
I think the reason that I did that was just after reading the book by Kyle Bristow called White Apocalypse, I realized that what he had done is taken a sort of action-adventure scenario and merged it together with something real-life, or at least theoretical. That way, he's producing a book that is interesting to the reader, it's fun to read, it's energetic, it catches the attention of the person reading, and it gives them a real message at the same time. I'm trying to do that in this book as well, so I'm trying to dovetail a fictional story with real-life things that people can learn from. A very good example of this is where Jack is at the pro-white conference, and he gets a chance to talk to a psychology professor there who explains to him why the leftist propaganda had such a great effect on his mind. I had to do some research on this. Actually, I had tried to get Professor McDonald to write that segment, but I guess he was too busy or didn't understand what I wanted or whatever. So I had to do some research and find some answers as to why and how propaganda affects our minds. This way, as the reader reads through these segments, they actually get a real-life lesson. So they begin to, well, like in this case, they begin to learn how the propaganda affects their actions. And, of course, in the fictional story, Jack begins to learn how the propaganda affected his mind and caused him to hesitate that night, caused him to defer, as it were, to these to the blacks when he, you know, ended up being captured and all that. So really, I'm just trying to dovetail two different concepts into this book.
Uh-huh. I'd like to say, well, first of all, this is a violent story. It is very violent. Folks who pick it up to read it might be kind of shocked by the things that Jack carries out. And your very vivid descriptions, by the way, very well done, very well executed. But even though I like this story, I appreciate what you've done with it, there are going to be those who say that you are advocating violence. Are you advocating violence?
No, I'm not trying to advocate any violence. It's just the way I imagine the first three volumes is book number one covers what happened to Jack and how horrible it was, how horrible these crimes are, and how he begins his learning phase. Book numbers two and three will change the story a little bit. Book number two has already gone to the editor. I'll give you a little story on that. In this one, he's going to begin by going to that town and fighting some bad guys, but then he's going to be encouraged to join with a group of people that are trying to fight against some of the bad guys, and they're going to offer him some special training and all these sorts of things. So book number two won't be as dark as this one. This one, the first one, of course, is very dark because, you know, the crime committed against him and his fiancée are, you know, quite horrible. I'm sure anybody wouldn't understand that. But I do something in this book, or this and other books, in an effort to try and stop anybody from going out and doing anything like this. What I was thinking as I wrote it was that someone, a young person especially, might read this and say, oh, I want to go out and do that. That's cool. I want to do it. But as I wrote the story, I wrote it so that Jack does a very great deal of reconnaissance and practice and making careful plans for everything. He goes through all the logistics. I mean, everything is military accurate timing all the way through, and he really goes through a great deal of work. Hopefully, that will discourage anyone from going out and doing something in a rash fashion.
I gather that the violence that you portray in the story, well, the story is not so much about the violence that Jack carries out, but it's about how the violence perpetrated on him and Libby, what that violence turns him into. It turns him into a a vengeful machine. And you said that Jack represents our race as it is now. As I see it, Mr. Conrad, the story is about Jack experiencing what he experienced and watching, being made to watch Libby be tortured to death. And those events made him what he is. And this is actually a warning that if we hesitate any longer with the situation that we're in, we might turn out just like Jack, and we might just resort to this kind of thing. So it's better that we just avoid that kind of violence so that we don't have to become what Jack is. And avoiding that violence doesn't mean we cower. It means we'd be prudent, it means we'd be smart, and it means that when the situation does present itself, that we defend ourselves so that we don't have to set out on what Jack is doing. Have I got that right?
Yes, to a certain extent, but of course the analogy that I'm making between Jack and Libby also indicates that, you know, Jack is our race now, Libby is our race in the future. And the hatred directed against our race is depicted as the violence directed against Libby. So, you know, I had to do it that way because, you know, if we continue to hesitate, our entire race will be destroyed.
All right, like Mr. Conrad Winston, take a timeout right there. We're going to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back with more of this interview right after this.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
You know, folks, it's kind of silly that we have to waste time clarifying the fact that we are not advocating violence. It's because, of course, our opponents, they who control the media, misconstrue everything we say, do, and believe to the extent that we have to offer these disclaimers. Certainly, you know, you watch all the movies coming out of Hollywood. Almost all of them involve someone getting killed or dying. And then you never hear those directors saying, you know, we're not advocating violence with this movie. I don't remember Quentin Tarantino ever giving an interview after Django Unchained where he was asked that question, even though perhaps in that case it was actually true. But this is the crazy world in which we live. Mr. Conrad, I want to ask you to give the listeners more information as to where they can get more details about the book on the internet and buy the title, and then we'll let Winston conclude the interview in this our final segment together.
Okay, the book is available through Amazon. Probably the easiest way to get information on the book is to go to the website I've set up for the book. It's jackswar.com. You can do everything from there. There's links that'll take you to anywhere that you know you need to go to buy the book.
Fair enough. Winston, back over to you.
Thanks, James. James, I just wanted to, Mr. Conrad, please forgive me, but I want to clarify something that James has said. It is a shame that we have to give disclaimers about our opposition to violence, and it's infuriating, actually, when you think that it's usually the left who is deploying violence against people. There's a meme going around the internet that points out that the Fort Hood shooter was a registered Democrat, a Muslim. The Columbine shooters, Klebold and Harris, they were too young to vote, but both families were registered Democrats. They were progressive liberals. The Virginia Tech shooter wrote hate mail to President Bush and his staff. The Colorado shooter was a registered Democrat. He worked on the staff of the Obama campaign. He was an Occupy Wall Street participant. He was a progressive liberal. The Connecticut school shooter, alleged Connecticut school shooter, he was a registered Democrat. He was an anti-Christian bigot. Congresswoman Gaby Giffords' shooter was a leftist, registered Democrat. And, you know, I mentioned Kamal Kamban, leftist. And so was Khalid Ahmed. And I remember Nina Totenberg wondering, hoping that General Boykins would die soon. She said, I hope he's not long for this world. So, folks, it's not us who are advocating violence. It is the left. You know, it is people like who the SPLC supports, I should say. All right. I'm sorry for that, Mr. Conrad, but I just had to get that in.
Oh, that's quite all right. You're quite right, and I don't really mean to advocate violence in the book. Actually, what I'm trying to do is demonstrate the violence that's coming back at us. I suppose the best answer I can give you is the same one that this fellow that calls himself Horace the Avenger uses, is that right now we're playing baseball, and we have to play by the baseball rules. That is, of course, we don't break the law. We work within the law to accomplish our goals. I think that's a pretty good statement on his part.
I have a theory I'd like to run by you. The reactive pattern of our people, and by our people, I mean white nationalists, is our reaction to events like what Jack and Libby go through is first rage, and we are very angry at first. And then we eventually just kind of let it go and occasionally bring it up when we want to make a discussion point. Even though instances of white people being physically attacked happen with alarming frequency, there's still time between them that lets our shock and anger diminish. I think one of the reasons we keep getting attacked like this is because we don't do something about it. And I don't mean like Jack does, but I think we don't take to the media. We don't demand that our point of view be heard in the way that the Trayvon Martin people are doing it. We just let them get away with it. And so since we let them get away with it, they're going to keep doing it. They have no real reason to stop. Am I right that way?
I I think you're quite right in what you're saying. The only reasons I can imagine for this is just the very nature of how the white community is set up. For the most part, white people are trying to educate themselves and take care of their families and their children and pay their children and pay their bills and take care of their lives and build their lives. Of course, they're also surrounded, as I said earlier, by this anti-white leftist propaganda that keeps much of the news from them in the first place. Of course, this is all changing very fast. White people are beginning to realize what's going on as there's more and more violence against us every day. But of course, for most people, until something happens in their own personal lives that makes it all very real to them and very painful, they just aren't quite moved emotionally enough. Which brings me to an interesting point on this book that I'm trying to do in the book. You know, we have a lot of really, really good writers on our side. They cover all kinds of subjects, from economics to anthropology to the history of our race, crime statistics. But I'm afraid one reason we keep failing in our efforts to reach the minds and the hearts of our people is because most people are very slow to react to facts and figures, to logical input. If you'll notice, the left almost always relies on emotional stimulus. It's like Horace said once upon a time in a program I heard, our side goes out, we give lectures or speeches in different colleges or whatever, and we win the debate, but we lose the heart of the audience or the hearts of the audience because we don't make the emotional appeal, which is something I'm trying to do in this book. I'm trying to make more of an emotional appeal. If you get a chance to read over that section where Jack's at that conference again, you'll begin to realize I mentioned there also that facts and figures take the long way through the brain. But emotional stimulus goes right to the center of the brain real quickly and has a much stronger hold. That's why the left always uses emotions. Matter of fact, if you look at look around at the people that are on the pro-white side now, you will probably begin to realize that they joined with our struggle because of some emotional input, not just logic. There's very few people that come to our movement based just on facts and figures and logic. It's usually always an emotional stimulus of some sort.
Every time I picked up the book to read it, I became, well, actually infuriated, even in the relatively peaceful scenes. I can say with certainty that your descriptions are obviously calculated to evoke something like rage in the reader or some kind of very heavy emotional response. Do you see that as dangerous, or am I right on that?
You know, it's part of the analogy I'm working, and I don't see it as dangerous. I just see it as a way to entertain the reader. You know, there's a lot of books out there like the Executioner series that has some very violent stuff in it, and there's people that just like the action adventure series or types of books, kind of like White Apocalypse. I'm trying to use this emotional hook, as it were, to get their attention, to get them to move along with the characters in the book and learn and grow, just like Jack is learning and growing.
Mm. One of your descriptions that really struck me and has stuck with me is the way you described the reason for what those feral thugs did to Libby Springfield. I'm just going to read it right from the book. Here's what you write. Mm. Eventually, it became apparent that what really enraged these seven subhumans was Libby herself. It was her grace, beauty, carriage, and very being that they hated. They just could not tolerate the presence of what they knew they could never become. That is simultaneously one of the most beautiful things I've read in a long time, and one of the most, it's emotional and it's a sledgehammer.
It is. I hope it also helps people understand, if you keep it tied to the analogy, the reason these people, the leftists, the blacks, the anti-whites, whatever they are, hate our race so much is not because of what we've done to them. White people have done a great deal of good for them, especially in the last several decades. They hate our race because they see something in us. They see a future in us that they know they cannot acquire or obtain. It's a deep jealousy and hatred in these people.
Mr. Conrad, that being said, we're up on our next commercial break. Stay tuned, everybody, for the conclusion of tonight's program right after this.
The Political Cesspool Guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten the free people to be knowledgeable with current, important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the final segment of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program. We have just a fleeting minute or two remaining with our featured guest for the evening. And Winston, I'll let you wrap it up.
Thanks, James. Mr. Conrad, I think we've come to the end of our allotted time, and I'm sorry we have to end it this way, but I look forward to having you back on the program when Volume 2 is out. I want to thank you for writing this book. I encourage everybody to lay hold a copy of it. It's not really for younger readers, but it gives older readers some very good information that they can pass on to younger readers. Mr. Conrad, I'm going to give you the last word, sir.
Okay, well, once again, I'd like to thank you all for letting me be on the program and talk about my little book. And, of course, as we mentioned earlier, anybody that wants to hear more about the book or order it can just go to jackswar.com. You can go there or to Amazon, either one, and pick up a copy there.
And, folks, we'll expect you to do just that. Mr. Conrad, thanks for giving us so much of your time on a Saturday evening for tonight's broadcast.
You're quite welcome. Thank you very much.
All right, Winston and everybody else here, as we're rounding out the program, a lot of stuff on the website this evening that we haven't had an opportunity to cover. It's been a busy night with a guest and the Confederate History Month hour, and we had a little bit of time during the opening hour to talk about the goings on at the American Renaissance Conference last week. But other good items that I want you to check out on the website before they're pushed back down the blog feed. Weekly Standard. I try to stay as far away from publications like that as I can. The neoconservative Weekly Standard. But even they now are exposing the Southern Poverty Law Center for what they are. When you get neoconservative rag headed up by people like Bill Kristol calling you out, that's pretty bad. I mean, we would expect them to call us out for telling the truth. But when they're calling out a left-wing organization, they're pretty much bedfellows. So even the Weekly Standard, the SBC's gotten so bad, the Weekly Standard even has to distance itself from it. Dr. Michael Hill, president of the League of the South, wrote an excellent article exclusively for thepoliticalcesspool.org, Why My Heart's in Dixie. That's posted this week as part of our Confederate History Month series. An examination of the modern-day GOP, an article entitled Trying to Fix Stupid, that's up there. MSNBC, we've been on their hit list a few times. They have openly demonized all white Republicans this week. Believe it or not, and you would probably believe that MSNBC would have a hippie host by the name of Crystal Ball on their roster of non-talent. Well, Crystal Ball is her name, and not a fake name. That is her legal name, and she was on there talking about the evil of white Republicans. Eddie Miller, birthday last week. We talked about that on the show, and it's on the blog as well. Pat Buchanan talks about the potential war with North Korea, such as wars or fault these days, and much more, all at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Well, and of course, the big story, the one story that really caught my eye, and we did cover this at the top of the show, was a public school in Massachusetts doing a play, seventh graders doing a play in which the biblical characters on Noah's Ark were homosexuals having a rhinoceros perform sodomy on them with his horn. You can't pray in schools anymore, but you can get the students to enact plays like that, and apparently it's all well and good. All at the Political Cesspool this week and more. And Winston, I got a treat for you, my friend. I don't know the last time it was that you had the opportunity to be live on the air with none other than our intrepid Political Cesspool correspondent, the man who first began logging his reports back when me and you were on the show together, 07, I want to say, 06 even. Peter Scoop Stanton with us tonight. Winston, your thoughts on that?
Well, it's always a pleasure to work with Scoop Stanton. He had a deadpan sense of humor. He was just funny. I miss hearing his voice. I miss hearing the way he says things. I'm glad he's still with us.
Well, I am too, and he, Scoop and I, exchange rather salty text messages throughout the week, and we clean it up a little bit for the show. And as I have done since I became a father, I have reimmersed myself in the Disney classics: Peter Pan, Pinocchio, Dumbo, Cinderella, Snow White. All the good old stuff. And apparently, Scoop Stanton's daughter has begun doing the same thing this week, and so we're going to end the show on a much lighter note, contrasted with the message of Jack's War. Scoop, how you doing tonight, buddy? Scoop, are you still with us? Well, it is live radio. Maybe we have just punked ourselves, but Scoop calls in from work. Scoop calls in from work, and apparently his boss must have caught him in the janitor's closet, logging in his nightly report. I don't know what happened, but I know Scoop was going to talk about the reaction his daughter experienced when she watched Peter Pan a couple of days ago. And Winston, I know you're the father of several daughters, more than Scoop and I have combined, and we're going to do a little Disney showdown, but I don't know, maybe Scoop's getting reprimanded right now. You know, we don't get paid to do the show as hosts, so God knows our correspondents don't. He calls in from work, God bless him, and I don't know, hopefully he's not in trouble right now. We'll find out next week, I guess. We don't know where he went. So Winston, save me here.
Well, James, it's the old Disney classics. They are really good. One of my favorites was Jungle Book. I liked Jungle Book because I like Rudyard Kipling.
Kipling, not so much necessarily mentioned in the Jungle Book, but you read some of his words on the more taboo of today's contemporary topics, and he'd have been a co-host on the Cesspool, I believe.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. He wrote the long poem Gunga Din, in which some people say it's racist because he doesn't do justice to Gunga Din. But at the end of the poem, he says, "You're a better man than I am, Gunga Din." But you talk about the Disney classics, and it's a shame that one Disney classic you can't get anymore is Song of the South.
Correct.
With the character Uncle Remus in it. And The reason why you can't get that is because it's considered verboten to portray a character like Uncle Remus as being happy. Apparently, he was I don't know if he was a slave or whatever, but he was a black guy in older times, and he's happy, and he lives in a little shack, and he doesn't wear finer clothes. He dresses pretty well, but he's happy, and You can't depict an older black person as being happy. That's offensive. Folks, when you can't show somebody being happy for fear of offending a favored group, times is bad when that happens.
Well, and all the Disney movies had such healthy and normal messages, the Snow White, Cinderella, girls finding love, girls being content, especially in the case of Snow White, doing housework. I mean, imagine that. So imagine, it's amazing they haven't banned Snow White. There's just so many ways. You talk about classic Disney films. I mean, the Davy Crockett series that Disney was famous for all had such healthy and normal messages, all of which have become taboo to a great extent that the cartoons are just so enduring that even political correctness hasn't had a chance to stamp them out yet. But Disney himself, and we've talked about this many times, you talk about Rudyard Kipling, but Disney was, born in rural Missouri, grew up in the heartland, very conservative traditionally, and certainly had his own beliefs with regard to Jewish power and influence in Hollywood and even racial differences, and a lot of that's been whitewashed. They haven't been able to take Disney's name off of the mask there because they cash in on it, but certainly his political beliefs have been largely glossed over in modern times.
Disney would be absolutely appalled at what's become of his vision. But that's the way liberals work, James. They don't go through the hard work of establishing a reputation and constructing buildings and setting up things like that. They specialize in infecting organizations and institutions that have already spent the money building buildings and establishing a reputation, and they feed off the reputation, the good reputation of what's been done before, though they don't share the pedigree of those who established it.
Takeover and subversion.
Well, yeah, that's what the Frankfurt School is all about. The long march through the institutions. That was their modus operandi.
Well, Winston, I'll tell you what. We didn't have a lot of time to really sink our teeth into this final segment, but I appreciate the time that we did have, and I only wish Scoop could have shared his testimony. And we'll give folks an update at the top of the next show. We'll let you know if Scoop's still gainfully employed there in the Washington D.C. area. We'll find out. We might be doing another fundraiser earlier than expected. I don't know. Hey, Winston, love you, brother. Thanks for bringing Conrad onto the show tonight. For Keith Alexander, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, and Peter Scoop Stanton, the rest of the Cesspool staff here. Art Frith, of course, our announcer, the crew in Utah and here in Memphis. I'm James Edwards. God bless y'all, and we'll talk to you next week when Confederate History Month continues.